Yes, good evening. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, with Keith Kennedy, as always, and this is the Halloween episode. Keith, this is one of your favorite times of year.
Yeah, that's funny.
I see you smiling.
I smiled inadvertently.
Because you said the word Halloween?
Because you said the word Halloween.
Yeah.
And we were doing a Halloween episode, and it's very exciting.
You smile. I mean, smiling's a thing you do, but I did see that out of my periphery.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's because you love this time of year.
It was also like kind of a Halloween-y smile. Like slow, creeping.
Cryptic.
Yes.
Kind of Grinch-like.
Grinch-like. You got the holiday right.
Tim Curry-esque.
The Grinch of the holiday.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of mix holiday metaphors. We've alluded.
Get the mistletoe.
We've alluded to this in the last few weeks, but why don't we start the show by you explaining why this time of year matters to you?
I think we've discussed before that I like the fall a lot, and
right.
I probably referenced Halloween in that regard. And it's just all intertwined for me. There's something about the changing of the seasons and the colors and the cooling off, which reminds me of home because it's often fall-like
Newfoundland. We did an essay actually about this, so even just the season.
Yeah.
Alone is a big part of it.
It gets me excited.
And that's right. We did that essay a couple weeks ago.
And then I'm a big fan of horror as a genre, both film and television and books. I write horror, and I've read it since I was really, really small. And just all together, Halloween is all of those things.
Yeah.
It's the horror and the season and just people wanting to have a good time, which is great. Anytime that people are trying to be cool or nicer, they have a specific reason to, they often do that, and the world's a better place.
Does dressing up matter to you? I know I asked you before the show when the last time was you dressed up. It's mm-hmm. been a long time. Was that ever, as a kid, did it matter to you to dress up for Halloween?
For sure. Yeah. I was a typical kid, except for the fact that on the East Coast, I was just sharing this with my friend's kids the other day. They're showing me their costumes, and I said, you know, when I was a kid in Newfoundland, it was often snowing on Halloween. If not snowing, it was really, really cold, so we had to wear our snowsuits.
Wow.
And so that either meant you had a snowsuit over your costume, or you had one of those like cheap costumes that you could put on. So I'd have a snowsuit and just like a Papa Smurf mask over my face with like a toque sticking out. So it's just like
it
one
is a
piece
bit,
of the costume.
It's like a little bit, it's kind of like the World Series in baseball. It's just gotten a little bit too late. But you know, if it wasn't for global warming, I think this would be a concern. But with global warming, I think the way that the World Series now tends to go into November and Halloween is kind of on the cusp of winter is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it wasn't for global warming, I would suggest we roll it back about a month.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of, if you're going to go out and wear a costume and you can't breathe too well, the combination of rain and
some
sleet
parts of the
and
world,
snow.
That's the way it is anyway.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that on the radio as well, that I remember it was a notable thing when I was wearing my shorts one time on Halloween here in on the West Coast.
Yeah.
When that's obviously quite a contrast to the snowsuit Papa Smurf outfit I had on.
A,
in my
for the reasons we've just discussed, and B, it was notable because it represented the first time you put no effort into a costume.
Yeah. I was shorts guy.
You're just a guy.
Shorts guy.
Just a guy called shorts guy.
Shorts guy.
What was the best take you ever had in terms of trick or treating?
Oh, that's a
Do
good
you remember?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Thank you.
I remember when I was young, I had an aunt who I grew up with she was quite young. So she was like the youngest member of her family and I was the oldest of mine. So generationally, she was more like my big sister. We lived a couple of streets away and she was only 4 years older than me.
Sure.
So there's a couple of times in my life where she really played the big sister. And that was one time I was maybe 9 or 10 and we lived in a subdivision. And what was happening in that neighborhood was that people were just driving to the subdivision because it was a nice contained area to get candy. So my neighborhood was flooded with kids. So I went out and got a few things and it was okay. And then like later in the night, my, you know, 13 or 14 year old aunt came by and said, hey,
take two.
Let's do it. Let's do it. And so we went to the street over this really long winding street that was sort of behind the subdivision. And a little bit later, and there was no one out, and we just loaded up because no one had had any action. So they had so much candy left that when we came by at like 9:30, they would just give us a ton of stuff.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't just that you double dipped, but it's that they were willing to sort of, oh, you're probably the last one tonight, just take the rest.
Yeah.
And how many houses did that? How many houses, rather than giving the one treat or two treats?
Like, I think we probably hit 30 places, and I'd say about half of them, like at least half emptied their little pumpkin thing or hole into our
And what were,
pillowcases.
What were you using for your booty?
Was it a pillowcase?
Pillowcase.
We went large, because I even thought that was weird, but Holly, my aunt, was like, let's do this pillowcase style.
I always thought the trick-or-treaters that just had, like you mentioned, the jack-o'-lantern plastic container were always setting the bar so low.
Yeah, too low.
For me, it was like at least a pillowcase the goal here.
I think there's probably a psychological connection there too. Like if you have a tiny little thing, they're gonna give you one thing. But if they have to play a part in filling up your sack,
yeah,
they might give you more than one.
Yeah. I remember mapping out the routes in advance. I remember like actually considering the region around my house and even actually plotting out a tentative route that would be abided by.
That's awesome.
And then the last memory, like a lot of people, I generally have lived in apartments in years of late. But my last, most recent memory of being on the other side of it and dishing out the candy to kids was actually living in a house in Toronto. And there was a kid that came to the door, and a couple kids, and I gave them some candy. And in my mind, without any provocation, without any context for this, the kid was just pointed at me as he walked away, and he's like, "You're high."
What?
And he walked away, and I went back and I sat down. And I thought that was bizarre.
Were you high?
But I was really high.
Well, there you go.
So
kid knows what's up.
In my mind, initially, I was like, what's the basis of this? And I thought, maybe it has something to do with the fact that you are high.
Yeah.
And he noticed that somehow.
Was he dressed as an undercover police officer? Was he a narc?
I think he was an undercover police officer dressed as a child.
Yeah, dressed as a...
As a narc.
As a narc.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's layered.
So there's a heartwarming family.
Dressed as an onion.
A Halloween story for you. Cool. Keith, I know that of late, you've had your essays that you've written for the show.
Mm-hmm.
We've been looking forward to this episode. You know, we considered serializing Halloween for the month of October and sort of leading up to it, but having different elements throughout the month. But we kind of got sidetracked by the Orange Man.
Side-trumped.
We got side-trumped. Now, of course, the election is still coming up, but we've decided to just set that aside entirely.
Yes.
And I guess my point is because we didn't serialize it, we decided this is the Halloween show. You've written a lengthy... It's a ghost story.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not an essay at all. We've been doing essays. This is a story.
This is a short story, yeah.
And I invite you to go ahead and, in your time, share with us your ghost story on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, with Keith Kennedy. Halloween is tomorrow, of course. A lot of people celebrate Halloween on the weekend, but tomorrow is the actual Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, what's with the yelling animals? Can we turn down the yelling animals?
I have no control over that, unfortunately. It's just one track. So I cannot influence the independent sound elements. Sorry.
Is that a...
It's ironic because...
Is that a gorilla?
Having the music is supposed to service the story.
It's not.
But all that it's doing is distracting me from... But I'm sorry. I'd love to take it off for you, Keith, but we need to... conjure up the image. There's a theremin.
There's a theremin? Okay. Maybe we can just...
So just, you know, try to ignore it, but just, it's not for you, it's for the listener. So consider this. You're providing the element, which is the story. The sound needs to be there, too, to cue the listener that Halloween is happening here on the radio.
Okay, the story's called Jump Rope. It is odd to me, now that I prepare to recount the story, that a brightly lit hallway would play such a part in a tale of this particular nature. Yet it strikes me as appropriate that when others recount their tales, they are often clouded with gloom and darkness, creaking windows and aching buildings, adding an all-too-familiar atmosphere to the proceedings. And because my story is, in essence, a true one, perhaps that's why it comes without the regular ghostly foibles of those trying to tell a tall tale ever taller. That year at school, I had taken to jumping rope as both exercise and hobby, wishing to avoid the larger lads in the boxing quarter of our yearly physical education regime. I noticed that when one was called out as next in the ring, a good diversion was to spin the rope ever faster as if the exertion being depicted was virtually incapable of interruption. Despite my increased physical exercise that semester, I continue to find myself struggling with sleeplessness at least two nights out of any given week. I discovered by sheer boredom and the luck of wandering feet that I could, by a path devised by an elder classman, a long-graduated alumni, sneak out of the dormitory and into the south garden. I think on occasion that I was seen and that I was left alone due to my family, my grades, and the simple and unassailable fact that I was only breaking protocol so that I could jump rope and wear myself out just enough to fall asleep for the night. Still, I took a proper to excessive amount of pride in my stealthy transgression, and gleefully went about acting like I was beneath the notice of guards and teachers alike. To the west of my room, in my first year at school, they'd installed one of those fluorescent lights, a new and exciting thing at the time. It was brighter by half than any other light or combination thereof in the rest of the entire dormitory, and shone on through the night like a beacon from God, or at least the god of boys needing to use the washroom after nighttime curfew had been sung. It was by my desire to exit the building and jump myself into restfulness that I became fully acquainted with the bright western hallway. Not only was it an assault on the eyes, it was also the most exposed part of my shadowy journey into the garden, and the place in which I was most likely to be stopped and reprimanded. This had happened on occasion, when one of the teachers who didn't play favorites with me was working late and witnessed my creeping beneath the bright light. Most often, I made it beyond the hallway unmolested. From there, it was a little jaunt down the western stairs, a spiraling case full of shadows and mean little echoes, and then a sprint through a rather dark corridor with windows along the south wall that looked out over the tall, well-manicured hedges, before an exterior door that had an odd streak of darkness where a moth had somehow died inside the bulb housing and never been removed. It was in this shadow, near the door and hidden by the moth's wing, that I would crouch, pretending I was on the last leg of an incredible and secret journey. No matter how many times I took this route, never did I fail to stop and take in the wonder of my bravado in this small crevice. The garden itself was unwatched, as it was walled on all sides, save for the eastern, where the door led back up into the dormitory. There was no unnatural light in the garden, save for the spreading halo of the tall lanterns at the front of the school, and therefore visibility was controlled by the whims of the moon, another fact I quite enjoyed. It made me feel as though I was making some pact with a man up there, and when he couldn't comply, I imagined I'd slighted him in some menial way, perhaps by not eating all of my porridge that morning. Present moon or no, I always managed to get my exercise, for it takes a little light to jump in, and I'd long since learned the entire layout of the garden by earlier evenings of generous moonlight. I never went near the place in the day, mainly due to an odd feeling that it would be the biggest affront on the moon that could be imagined, to form some sort of adulterous relationship with his great and evil adversary, Mr. Sun. My story begins on one particular night, when in the bright hallway, nearly halfway down, I was halted by an unusual flicker. It struck me still, for only that morning, during English literature studies, we'd been told the tale of the grounds by our teacher, Mr. Manley. He was a gentle bloke and possessed the perfect voice for adding false serenity and cold realism to any ghastly tale. This particular day was no exception, and in addition, Mr. Manley added the attractive addendum that this story was, in fact, one of the truer ones he'd ever told us. The story recounted the tale of a lightning storm that had taken the countryside quite by surprise on the eve of the summer solstice when he was a boy. Mr. Manley hadn't been attending Briarside himself, but rather took school at home in one of the neighboring counties. His personal portion of the tale was one of a single, huddled night around the fire with his parents and two siblings, while father told scary stories. But it was not his personal experience that fueled the tale Manley shared with us that morning. Rather, he told the tale of a boy at Briarside who'd been found quite dead just hours after the storm had died down. The boy had died of a broken neck, hung by a length of old white flag rope from a tree branch out in the yard. A tree that Mr. Manley says is no longer there, not because the story is false, but because the tree became such a target for silliness in the months afterward. Needless to say, the circumstances of his death were mysterious. Due to the chaos and confusion surrounding the intensity of the storm, it had been very difficult to trace the events that led to the boy killing himself during the intense weather. In fact, there were many that claimed he could not have killed himself at all. Besides the friends of the young lad who'd come to his defense, claiming he was not the sort to end his life prematurely, there were also some facts that were gathered afterward that pointed to the boy's death more likely being a murder. The main fact, that the knot used on the rope was so complex that the boy couldn't possibly have tied it himself, was dismissed weeks later, when it was discovered that the boy's father had come from a long line of sailors. That, coupled with the fact that no one on the faculty and no one on the grounds at the time had any history of sailing themselves. This particular fact quelled remaining suspicions, and the case dwindled and was eventually abandoned. So it was on this night that when the light above me flickered, I was inundated with myriad images from the story, told expertly and coarsely by Mr. Manley, and found myself in a state of quivering fear that was most unlike me. Perhaps it is only some silly sense of pride, but I'd like to believe that had the door across from me not opened at exactly that moment, I would have shaken myself out of my state, recovered my faculties, and continued on down the hall as any other night. Instead, a man that I did not recognize emerged from the classroom, and I was caught, frozen, scared, and out of my room well past curfew. Except I wasn't caught. The man did not look up from what he held in his hands as he turned, closed the door, and locked it with a key. At first, I couldn't see just what it was. Then the man turned and headed down the western hallway, letting the bundle of rope, white rope, drop a little to hang from his outstretched hands. Though I thought I'd been scared before, this imagery caused me to nearly loose my bladder in the hallway. When musing on a ghastly story, one does not expect present events to so align with imagination. It was the key that brought me back around and kept my pants from getting soaked. I'd never once seen a teacher pull a key and lock a door, though I did recall some of the doors still had those old keyholes. It occurred to me that the practice of actually using keys to lock doors was one of the past, at least at Briarside. An act of the past, a rope from an old story, and a teacher I'd never before seen combined to have a dual effect on me. It chilled me in a way that the terror of the flickering light and the emergence of the man himself had not, and to my surprise, got my feet moving slowly beneath me. I crept along behind the man as he moved to the end of the hallway. For a moment, when he moved from the bright light to the head of the stairs, he flickered, as the light had before, and I was again raised with memories and visions of that lightning-filled storm on the night of the story. I hurried my feet, as much as possible without making noise, and tried to catch up to the man. By the time I started my descent down the dark, twisting stairwell, there I have fallen into the trap of all stories of this nature, though I swear my description is accurate, I was sure that the man in question was just around the corner from me, and that I'd see him again once we'd come to the end of our twirling descent. Only when I did come out at the bottom of the stairs, he was nowhere to be seen. He must have quickened his pace considerably if he'd already gotten beyond the hallway and out through the door. I rushed down the corridor, hands flat against the wall behind me, my jump rope wrapped around my wrists, its wooden handles dragging against the wall. Having assumed the man outside and out of earshot, I was more than surprised when I saw him emerge, like a piece of old paper, unfolding by itself after being loosely crumpled and thrown away, from the dark spot near the door where so often I took my false refuge. He turned around, eyes suspicious, and looked back along the corridor where I'd been scraping the handles along the wall. In his hands, the white rope had been fastened into an intricate knot, and he was clutching it with white knuckles. To my minimal relief, it was clear that he could not see me, and it was at this point that it first occurred to me that I was experiencing something truly supernatural. The man moved back toward the stairs, all the way, his neck crooning, expecting something to pop out. He arrived at the base of the stairwell and took a few cautious steps upward, checking to see that no one was there. It was in this moment, with his back turned to me, that my good sense fled, and my legs carried me to my corner, the one hidden by the shadow of the moth's wing, the very same corner from which the man himself had recently emerged. Once I arrived and slammed my back to the wall, I knew I'd made a mistake. The wooden handle of my jump rope had once again betrayed me, making a knocking sound against the old stones at my back. The man, gaunt and perplexed, turned on my position. He was kneading the rope between his hands, his fingers like long little snakes. So hard was he working at it that I thought it might come undone. He gazed into my corner, coming slowly toward me, licking his upper lip like he'd gotten pudding on it. I won't claim that it was some return to logic that caused me to do what I did, and often, on dark nights filled with lightning, I like to pretend that an angel came to me and whispered words of inspiration, like a personal muse sent by God on high. As the man edged forward, I unwrapped the jump rope from my wrists and slid it out toward him on the floor as explanation for the noise he had heard. He stopped only a foot away, head tilting to gaze into the darkness. His mouth opened, and my world became slow, watching his yellow teeth emerge from his dull pink gums, lips retracting. When he spoke, his voice was as bright and sharp as the hallway light, his breath as hot and metallic as lightning. "Where'd you get this?" he asked. I almost answered. Again, perhaps a fluke that I held my tongue, perhaps something more ethereal. To my disgust and surprise, another voice spoke into the darkness, the voice of a child. "I've never seen it before." I couldn't see him, and I was terrified to turn my head for a look, but the boy was right beside me, hunched with me in the darkened corner. The man's mouth had remained open, and now he breathed audibly in and out past his stained teeth. To this day, I remember that exact moment, and the absurdity of the thought I had, that it was terribly unfair that the dead were allowed to breathe at all. He looked down at his hands, the white rope in one, the jump rope in the other, weighing them as if some terrible judgment was nigh. Handing the jump rope back to the child beside me, he said, "Do this one too, then." I saw from the corner of my eye a sight I have never been able to unsee. Two small hands, smaller even than my own, reached out and took the jump rope. And though they were pale and they shook with fear, I could see them moving expertly over the rope, turning it into a complex knot. When the boy was finished, he tugged the rope like it was his intention to use it himself, some behavior of habit, and offered it up to the waiting man. The man looked at the boy's handiwork and promptly tossed the white flag rope back into the corner. "Leave it," he said, and extended his hand, palm up. The boy reached out and took it. In that moment, I could have had a good look, seen the victim of the crime, maybe even gleaned a clue as to what I could do to help. If only I'd had the bravery. Instead, I slammed my eyes closed and hugged my knees tight, hoping it would all be over soon. And it was. When I opened my eyes sometime later, the two characters were nowhere to be seen. To say that I quickly retreated from my corner hiding hole, to say that I bounded up the spiral stairs with abandon, to say that I streaked like personified lightning to my dormitory room would all be heinous understatements of fact. There are, in fact, no adjectives that now exist to properly exemplify the expediency with which I returned to my bed that night. The adrenaline kept me awake for a time, but terror was exhausting, and I found sleep even earlier than I would have had I gotten my jump rope in for the evening. Now, before my tale of ghostly encounters ends, I must also recount the meeting I had with Mr. Manley 3 days afterward, upon his next lecture. I stayed after class, sitting in my seat so that he would have to attend upon me. When everyone else was gone, he walked toward me, saying my name and asking why I'd remained behind. "I had a question," I said. "I was wondering about the story of the boy who'd been hung. When did that happen?" "Ah," Mr. Manley said with a smile, "have you been digging around a little?" In a way, I suppose," I said. 3 days ago was the anniversary, of course. That's why I told the story when I did. I was going to mention it, but I was curious to see if anyone would figure it out. It looks as though you have."
"Not exactly."
"Did you enjoy the story?"
"Yes."
"Good. It may be the last time I get to do it. There was another prank this year."
"Prank?"
"Yes. One of the older boys was quite ambitious. Tied the exact knot used in the hanging and left it by the door to the south garden." My skin grew pale in that moment, and it struck me that I should not be able to so easily feel the color fading from my face. Mr. Manley noticed.
"What is it?"
"Was the knot tied in a white rope?"
"Yes."
"How could you know that?" I tried to think quickly, sensing I could be in some trouble. "Everyone knows it was a white flag rope from the story." Mr. Manley grew even more concerned. "Is there something you wish to confess?"
"No, why?"
"Because there was no white rope in the story, son. That boy was hung from the tree with a jump rope."
Not really an appropriate sound effect for the story, but my effort to cue the listener, it's Halloween and we're telling stories, and they're scary stories.
I just got the end of that because I took my headphones off.
Oh, the ring, ring. Yeah, that's what it was. You know, there was a lot of gorilla sounds while you
were there.
Told that story.
Great.
And I know at the beginning I said, don't worry about it. It's for the listener. But as I listened to you tell the story, and I realized there were no gorillas in the story.
No, not a single gorilla.
I felt like, yeah, the gorilla thing's probably a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
But there it is, folks. It's Halloween. Halloween's tomorrow, but it's Halloween weekend right now, and we're celebrating it by talking about Halloween and by telling scary stories. And this, of course, is another... well, Keith's been writing essays. In fact, is this the first narrative story that you've told on the show?
The first one was pre-written, yeah.
Well, that's some explosive information.
I think. Yeah, I don't think I've written.
That's explosive. What is happening to this show? If you're a regular listener of the show, you know that two or three episodes back, I came across that sound effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been shamelessly trying to insert that into the conversation ever since.
I think it works.
But it's just, as you'll hear from the weakness of that other sound cue that I did. It's all right. It's just more satisfying to have a strong
sound effect. If you imagine that scene in Psycho.
Yeah.
With an explosion instead of that music. Imagine any classic horror scene in Jaws when the shark's coming.
Yeah.
Just imagine an explosion.
And
everyone's like, get out of the water.
I was actually looking for sound effects to use for Halloween, and it was a little bit harder than I would have thought. You know, I would have thought there'd just be a million options on mm-hmm. YouTube. But anyway, I found a few, and one of them was that iconic music from Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And also I thought, there was one called Boo, which I thought, oh, that's scary. It'll be some ghost going Boo or mm-hmm. whatever. So let's try that one.
Now we can edit this together for the podcast so that it sounds like that my story got booed.
Oh, it's funny. I was very conscious of, first of all, I felt like I wanted to play a sound effect after this story, but I mm-hmm. thought the explosion, we've kind of done that after you've done your essays.
I was expecting
I don't want to do the boo because it'll seem like I'm booing my story, your story. Yeah.
And then my feelings will be hurt on air.
Yeah. So, and I thought, well, the psycho thing doesn't really work because it kind of diminishes your original story by kind of insinuating it's psycho.
Mm-hmm.
But what can I say? I played it.
Yeah. There's some good iconic stuff that you could replace with explosions.
Yeah.
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 A lot of good things. I don't think explosions would make those things any worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now our segment on all the things we replaced with explosions.
It feels like that's the direction the show's moving in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when I have listened to the last couple episodes, because I am a listener of the show.
Oh, are you? Oh,
and
that's good. Thanks
for
listening.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Not a problem. I've got very little going on these days, mm-hmm. so I'm willing to pencil it in.
Oh, good.
Pencil is the key word.
Yeah.
It's not a...
Because it can be erased.
Yeah, I don't want it to be an indelible mark in my schedule.
Yeah.
But when I listen to that, I think, you know, it's sort of like I feel a premonition that within a matter of a few weeks, I feel like the show might just become all explosions.
Yeah.
And when I say all explosions, I mean that specific sound cue mm-hmm. just repeatedly for 60 minutes.
Is it possible that it's just our slow progression, our slow evolution into morning radio DJs?
Yeah. Well, I think it's our progression to that. And then realizing that's not quite the right fit for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it just becomes explosions.
It's just, yeah, all the time.
I think that me using some of these sound effects is moving in the direction of becoming that.
Yeah.
The morning commercial radio sound wacky guy. But ultimately we'll move beyond that into something more experimental, which will just
subversive.
Be explosions for 60
I think that
minutes.
Would be a fun... I would listen to that show if it was like... Explosive Jeff Bryant and Keith the Explosion Kennedy
yeah.
on the Explosive Morning Show. And then everything we ever did
yeah.
was an explosion.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, I don't know. I feel like if I was flicking through the stations, I'm a fickle listener. I don't really listen to a lot of music these days. So when I'm going through the stations, I'm pretty particular about what's going to get my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if it was just the sound of explosions, I'd want to know, what is it, a news report?
Yeah.
Is it a joke? What am I listening to? And if it was just the 1 minute rolled into the next, and it was just clearly the same effect,
mm-hmm.
I would be dazzled by that.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, is somebody taking over a radio station? What's going on here?
Also, the explosions don't ever get old, no matter how many times you do them.
Especially when they're rich and
deep,
sort of meaty.
Yeah.
Deep and meaty sounding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you're just tuning in, folks, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Jeff Bryant, and of course, we host Now We're Talking every Sunday from 6 to 7. Now listen, next week, the clocks are going to change. That's my least favorite day of the year. My favorite day of the year is when the clocks spring ahead,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to fall back, and I looked this up. It's going to happen next Sunday. Sunday morning at 2 a.m. to be specific, but you can work out the details. The point is, when we do the show next week, this changing of the clocks will have taken effect. So, Keith, I'll remind you that we're going to have to meet at the correct time. I can never work this out in my head. It's kind of like an IQ test question. So if it's falling back, does that mean we're meeting earlier or later? I don't know. But just Google it and show up at the right time.
I'm afraid to say in case
I had to
wrong.
Sit and like think for a minute to try to figure this out. I think what would happen if we didn't realize the clocks were changing, then we would come to do the show at 6 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
but the time would now be 5 o'clock. So mm-hmm. we would be doing our show prematurely.
Or...
So next week, worst case, you're going to tune in early.
Sure.
If you don't know what's going on.
Or it falls back, and so you get an extra hour, and so you end up showing up an hour late.
Or you end up taking that hour and doing something else with it.
This is a perfect microcosm of what our show is that instead of just telling people how it works, we've given them both options. There are only two.
Yeah.
Yeah. The option you don't have is to just understand it and be on time.
So we're talking about Halloween this episode. That's what this episode's devoted to. You know, we started this show in June. So every time we come across a new season and a new event, it's the first time we've had the chance to discuss it on the air. So we figured with Halloween tomorrow, let's make this the Halloween show. You know, you can give us a call at 604-822-2487. If you want to discuss Halloween, you could tell us, are you dressing up this year? Do you have any recollections of having dressed up for Halloween? Any, you know, we were talking before Keith about, I almost called you Candy.
Mm-hmm.
Candy, we were talking about Keith before. Keith, we were talking about...
I was a stripper.
We were talking about Candy before. and this river. Mm-hmm. And we were also talking about going around and trick-or-treating. You can call us about that. Or maybe you are a stripper and your name's Candy. You can give us a call. Really, sure. It's kind of the lines are wide open. It's 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. If you call us, we'll put your ass on the radio and we'll talk. And try to keep it clean. You know, I am the producer of the show. So there is, don't be under any misapprehension that we've got a producer in another room that's fielding the calls, going to sort of do the pre-interview, screen the calls.
Yeah.
I am the producer. Fraser. This is not Fraser. This is not Frasier. This is not any of those sitcoms.
I think I kind of went in between Fraser and Frasier there.
Frasier. It's like as you're saying it, you were like, is it Fraser or Frasier?
An azure sky of deepest summer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's from Clockwork Orange.
Which is orange.
Yes.
Just like Halloween.
Just like Trump's hair.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I did hear at one point in the story, I heard you talking about small hands.
Yep.
And I thought, is that a dog whistle? A liberal dog whistle?
Yeah. I don't think anything isn't now. I thought of Trump earlier in the episode, too.
But we're trying not to talk about Trump today. So what else do we want to say about Halloween? I told you about the last time that I handed out treats at the door and how that turned out for me. I haven't dressed up for Halloween in years and years. Do you remember your last costume?
Well, yeah. I made a costume a couple of years ago.
Okay. And you wore it? Or you just made it?
Yeah, just briefly. I don't know if this is sad or not, but me and my wife have been talking about this Halloween that we don't have any friends who, no, period, that's it.
We don't have any friends, that's it.
Friends? We don't.
What do you think of that?
We don't have any friends who have a Halloween party.
Okay.
That's missing from our tribe, so we're thinking that we might have to be the people who throw the Halloween party because we never have a reason to dress up. But traditionally, my wife and I go on a Halloween walk. You were talking earlier about planning out your route for candy, and it made me think that I'd never done that for purposes of trick-or-treating,
right.
But I have sort of planned out routes based on who's decorated their houses for Halloween, and my wife and I will walk around our neighborhood. And
she likes the Christmas lights, too, so it's...
Yeah, she likes the pretty lights.
Okay.
That's from The Crow.
Okay.
Actually, she says, I like the pretty lights. Movie quote day all of a sudden.
But you've mentioned in the past that you'll drive around to look at the pretty lights.
Yes, we drive around
to
look at the Christmas lights.
So anytime there's a house, there's a reason for it to be.
Yeah. The point is my wife is simple. She likes loud noises like explosions and pretty lights.
Oh,
hi, honey.
That's adorable.
I hope the doors are not locked when I get home. Yeah. So we go for a walk and... that's a thing, and so there was a little bit of costuming. I used to have this, if you read my blog today, I talked about this. I used to have this go-to costume, which is very nerdly, and some people really appreciate it. Do you remember the old video board game trend? So you'd have a board game, but it had a VHS.
I do. I had Clue.
Okay, right. Video Clue, yeah.
Yeah.
So I had the big famous classic one that most people remember. It's called Atmosphere.
Okay.
And there's characters in Atmosphere. The minions who would chase you around the board were called Soul Rangers.
With fear spelled F-E-A-R. Right? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think it was. Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing. Atmosphere. I'm guessing.
Sorry, it took me a second because you're like fear. And I was like, that's the actual spell. And I was like, oh, right. He means in Atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Cool.
And these Soul Rangers would chase you around the board. And it was sort of a Western thing. So my go-to costume at Halloween was being a Soul Ranger, which was like a stringy black wig and a skeleton mask and a cowboy hat. And so I would sometimes go out on our walk, or I'd go for a walk myself. Sometimes if she wasn't getting home early enough, I'd go when the kiddies were out and walk around and watch them and look at all their costumes and scare them.
It's funny how Halloween makes that not necessarily a cause for concern.
Yeah.
You know, like if
I put on a skeleton face.
If somebody
and
didn't
watch
understand
kids.
If somebody didn't understand or accept the convention that it's perfectly normal to do that, they'd be very disarmed and alarmed by the casual nature of you describing walking around in the neighborhood, observing the kids.
Yeah.
But it's in a non-predatory way. You're just appreciating Halloween.
Yeah, and in fact, to be truthful, it's often just about being outside and the atmosphere of it all. And Nancy likes looking at the kids' costumes and things, but for the most part... I don't care what they're dressed up as, unless you get. And once in a while, you get like a brilliant kid who has like their parents are involved. And
I like the kids that are in wheelchairs. That I've seen this a couple times now.
It.
Yeah, like I saw one where
turned into unicorns.
Kids, yeah, kid's dad turned into the Ghostbuster mobile.
Nice,
it was totally elaborate.
Yeah, that's why, because when a kid has some sort of disability, then it increases the chance that the parents will help. So the design plan becomes much more ambitious.
That is
cool. So costume wise, that's pretty much what my go-to, and we haven't had a party
have
to
that
go
costume.
To. I think I got rid of it a couple of years ago, but so just on a whim because I feel Nancy and I feel the spirit of Halloween quite a bit, and we just don't have an outlet for it as adults because of a lack of parties. So I felt that buildup of spirit, and I made a costume for myself. And Nancy wears a costume to work, usually.
A new one every year, or a go-to?
She's got a go-to, but she's had a couple of different things. So she's got a witch outfit. She's got an old black velvet dress. And so you can witch hat that, mother, and then you're witch immediately.
Witch hat means you wear a witch hat, and in combination with that dress, it's all witched up?
Yeah. Okay. Super witchy.
Just witch hat that. That's so sweet.
Just witching it.
Sweet verb.
Yeah. You gotta witch hat it.
New verbs on the show today. Witch hat it.
Uh-huh. It has dagged
so
sleeves.
So she'll wear the dress to work and then witch hat it when she gets to work?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Probably. I guess it really depends on whether or not she has to wear a stocking cap for the weather.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a couple years ago, she bought a Care Bear helmet thing that makes her look like a Care Bear.
Keith, I'm just going to quick interruption. Looks like we've got a caller on the line. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there. You calling about Halloween today?
Hi there. Yeah.
You want to talk about Halloween?
I would love to talk about Halloween.
So did you go out this weekend, or are you waiting for the actual Halloween?
I'm waiting for the actual Halloween.
And what's the, are you going to dress up?
I'm going to dress down.
Oh, you're going to dress down. Keith was just talking about witch hatting it. Have you ever heard about witch hatting it?
Witch hunting?
Witch hatting, like the hat that you wear when you're a hat?
Yeah, if you put a witch hat on with any outfit, you kind of become a witch.
It becomes more witch-like.
Yeah, I think that's a thing. Yeah, that's a thing.
I often cowboy hat it, too.
Yeah, Keith likes to cowboy hat it. His wife likes to witch hat it.
Yeah.
But you're going to be dressing down for Halloween. Is your name Candy?
It's Sheila again.
Oh, it's Sheila. That.
Yeah, we've had Sheila on our show.
That's funny. I can hear, I think that was maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, and I know that you're from West Virginia.
Yes.
And that you've been living in Vancouver. I can hear that the accent is already becoming more Canadian. Nice. I guess just through immersion into the culture.
Become more Canadian-ized?
Yeah, I think it sounds.
I think I'm just more chill.
Mm-hmm. You've become more West Coast chill. Mm-hmm.
West Coast chill bail.
Is that a way of saying that you've come to Vancouver and you've got into the weed?
I can't talk about that.
Okay.
It could just be that she's gotten away from all that coal.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of coal mining that goes on in West Virginia.
Okay.
And maybe it's whether you get into the weed, you're getting out of the coal.
Right.
So it's
getting
into
the
weed.
Coal, getting into the sun.
Exactly.
But I want to tell you something about Halloween.
Sure. Please.
So Halloween for me was always a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I loved it so much. And I would watch like Hocus Pocus. I would watch, like, you guys have, like, we have the Disney Channel, but you guys had, like, the Family Channel. Remember Family Channel?
I think so. I mean, vaguely, yes.
Well, all these Halloween shows would be on. There was this one show called Halloween Town.
Mm-hmm.
And this girl's name was Marnie.
Marnie.
And I hated that name so much.
Yeah.
I hated the name Marnie.
Yeah, that's a terrible name.
I know a girl named Marlee, and she hates it when she's called Marnie.
Marnie or Marlene is another one.
Marlene or
Marlene. I actually knew a girl called Marnine.
Mm-hmm. I knew a girl named Marlene. That's actually real.
Marlene, yeah.
Yeah.
But I knew a girl called Marlene that I called Marnine because I knew a girl named Marnie.
Right. I often get Marlene and Marnine mixed up.
Yeah.
I like Marnay.
Marnay.
Oh, Rebecca de Marnay?
Well, I don't know. Anyway,
in
so
Risky
by
Business.
So I would watch all these shows. Because they're my favorite things. And then when I went trick-or-treating, I went trick-or-treating until I was about, like, in grade 11. So, like, I was, like, 16, 17.
Sure.
And, but when I was a kid going trick-or-treating, after I came back, I would organize all the candy. Like, you know what they're, like, the buckets of ice cream? Remember the buckets?
Sure, the 4-liter buckets.
Yeah, so we had a lot of those. And then
into different food groups of candy?
Yeah, so they'd be, like, chips. It'd be about, like, you know.
Bubble gum.
Bubble gum. there'd be the chocolate.
Tootsie Pops.
There'd be the candy, the pops, yeah.
Granny Smith apples.
Razor blades.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. I loved Halloween.
And how long would it take you to eat all the candy?
Well, let's just say I had a lot of feelings, like in my teeth.
With your accent, sometimes I bet people misunderstand the word feelings for feelings.
I was going to say, I have a feeling that she did have some feelings. Yeah. Feelings.
Oh, maybe I said that. I don't know. But feelings, like with your teeth, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I had a feeling that's what
you meant. Teeth feelings.
So I had so much candy. I can't recall when, like how long it took, but I probably ate it fairly fast or kept, I don't know. It depends what kind of candy it was, you know?
Sure.
Depends on if you have a dad who would come in there and scope out his favorite stuff and thin the herd.
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of kids. Around, like my siblings, and we all had a lot of candy.
Right.
So it was kind of like, you don't touch mine, I don't touch yours, unless we trade it, you know?
Yeah, my family was like that too.
Yeah, if I was a dad with a bunch of kids, I would definitely, you know, insist on like 20% of all candy goes to the house.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a bit steep.
There's got to be
20%.
It just went up 25.
Oh.
Just went up because you doubted
me. You'll turn this car around.
Yeah, I will turn this car around to a place where there is no Halloween.
25%.
So are you going to go out? It sounds like you're dressing down tomorrow. What does that mean? You're not going out this year or you're too old now?
I want to go out, but I don't know. I don't know yet. It's just, you know, life gets the best of you and you just forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a question as a female?
Sure.
Well, I guess I'm asking you because you're a female, not as a female. Yeah, I'm asking it.
You're currently
I'm
male.
I'm a male, currently.
Right.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, on purpose, for sure. Do you find that my wife, I'll give you some context. My wife was trying to find a costume this year. And she found that she was getting a little overrun by the fact that every single costume she wanted to, she had an interest in, was a slutty version of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Even to the point where she said that there was what's the Ghostbusters? Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yes.
She's a big fan. I bought her a t-shirt of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man for her birthday, in fact. And she said there was even a slutty Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which was just like a bustier with like a blue line and a red bow tie.
Oh, yeah, they can make it all, anything.
And she says, I think the quote is something like, I just wanted to be something fuzzy.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. She wants to be like a bear or a bunny rabbit. Do you find that's an issue? Or are you yourself slutty and therefore want to go that route in case that's your thing? Or?
Well, let me tell you a little something. So I was always the young girl that was dressed up as like the scary weirdo.
Yeah.
And then in my school, there'd always be the other girls that were dressed up like the cat or the, you know, Supergirl, you know, but like really like, you know, skinky, what you were saying.
Yeah.
So it was always really bothersome for me because I didn't like the skank-hay stuff,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It wasn't my thing. And that's a big thing nowadays. So now it's just like an excuse for the girls to just dress up and look like, you know, something that they're not.
Yeah, which I think is fine if they choose it, but I just wish there was a bit more options, I think.
What would be good is if we're talking about costumes that don't have any basis, that aren't sexualized, like being the Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters. What if there was, but it becomes sexualized? What if it was the opposite? And you took, like, this year, you know, get the stripper costume, but you add marshmallows to it. To make it less sexy.
Is it just more edible?
Is it just candy?
Well,
again?
It shouldn't be edible because that, over time,
then they would become sluttier.
It would become slutty.
Right.
True. But if you're wanting to do that, that's a good idea for those people wanting to do that.
That's true. But people would have to ask for permission to eat the marshmallows, and you'd slap their hand away, and you'd say, and you'd say with a big marshmallow voice, I don't think so.
Yeah, no marshmallows for you.
You say it in as goofy a way as possible. What was the name again?
Who?
Your name.
My name, Sheila.
Yeah. And Keith, what's your name?
Keith.
It's Keith. Okay,
Candy.
I'm just writing all this down. Well, Sheila, I want to thank you for calling in, and I wish you luck tomorrow. And
I wish you luck.
Make sure you're safe and have a good time.
Thanks, fella.
Bye, Sheila.
Okay.
Bye.
See you
Happy
later.
Happy Halloween.
Well, folks, that's how it's done. You know, that's exactly how you do it. You give us a call at 604-822-2487, and we put your ass on the air. Just like that. And we trust that you will, you know, you will speak in a way that is befitting of the context. We're on the radio here. You know, no cussing.
Yeah.
No hate language. We don't want to incite genocide on the radio. Nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to just, you know, tell us how you
just
really
aim
feel.
Aim for less than genocide.
Yeah. Just think about where genocide is.
Yeah.
Below that.
Take it down a notch.
Take it down at least one
Step
notch.
Step away from the genocide.
A minimum one notch.
Yeah.
But feel free to give us a call at 604-822-CITR, 604-UBC-CITR. I don't know if that's helpful to people. I mean, I think if I was listening to the radio and I was driving and I wasn't able to look at my phone, I think I would remember that, mm-hmm. and then I could figure it out when I pull over to make the call. I think that's where it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But it is sometimes when you get those phone numbers that are all letters.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
I don't know. I think it's just a personal thing. I've never understand the letter thing. I would have,
really?
To, I have to look.
Because you have to look and you kind of need to try.
Who needs looking?
Yeah, you're looking and you're kind of it's like you're decoding. Yeah. It's like they're giving you a code. Anyway, the code is 604-UBC-CITR.
It's like Mitch Hedberg had a classic joke like that about how he just didn't understand the bag of bread with the other bag inside. Like it's double wrapped. He doesn't need another step between me and toast is the joke. Not delivered like Mitch Hedberg, I wouldn't even try.
And look what happened to him.
Yeah. Oh, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
People die.
People do. People do die.
You know what I've been doing?
Please.
I have, as my Halloween watching event this year. Well, I've got my big Halloween horror movie day, which I do. We've talked about.
Have you already done that this
year? Yeah, I did it yesterday.
Okay, we'll talk about that after.
Yeah, but in addition to that, I've been catching up on Tales from the Crypt.
Okay.
Were you ever a watcher of Tales from the Crypt?
This is the 80s, right?
Oh, you late 80s, early 90s or something.
Tales from the Crypt. Now, I'm thinking about Stephen King. I'm thinking about some movies that I'm thinking about. Creepshow is what I'm
thinking
about right
Creepshow.
Now. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's Tales from the Crypt?
Tales from the Crypt is a television show.
Okay.
It had a lot of people involved at the time. It's funny, I was a big fan when I was younger and watched it on reruns and it was in syndication. And it was always so famous for being a high quality thing. Like there's a lot of people, Richard Donner and Joe Dante and others, lots of people who were really big in Hollywood at the time were involved in Tales from the Crypt, and they would have guest stars. So every episode would have a famous star in it, if not two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, I always thought of it as such a high... hi, everybody. I always thought of it as such a high-quality TV show. But,
yep.
Of course, things become dated as time passes. And going back and watching it now, it's funny to realize what was once considered high-quality.
What's low-quality about it now?
It's just nothing. Nothing that sticks out other than age, right? Like, what was acceptable then compared to what's acceptable now. You can see the sets and where they've cut some budget, and you'll have a scene that takes place in the same place as another scene for no reason, like just the little things like that. But the quality in terms of writing and storytelling and acting and directing is totally good, and it's still.
What were some of the celebrity cameos?
Well, I could start naming.
Was Ted dancing in that, or was that just Creepshow?
I bet he was somewhere. Oh, he was in Creepshow. Yeah, that was a great Creepshow.
Remember that one?
Yeah,
with Leslie Nielsen.
I remember really well. Yeah, I've seen Creepshow like a million times.
Yeah.
Nancy, really, that one scares my wife a lot.
That specific one,
yeah. It's the one where they bury up to the neck and all that stuff. That's great. Creepy. If you haven't seen Creepshow, by the way, watch Creepshow.
What's funny is that both of those actors are more known for their comedic performances in Cheers and Naked Gun, respectively.
Well, that's one of the reasons Tales from the Crypt was so great, because there was a comedic feel. It came from the William Gaines magazine called Tales from the Crypt, and there was a lot of the stories that were published in that magazine were actually put on screen. But there's a little hint of humor to all of it. It's always supposed to be fun. It's never this dark, gritty kind of horror. It's always a bit of a twist or a crazy monster or someone gets their comeuppance. Anyone that you can possibly think of from back in the day has been in these
things. Michael J. Fox?
I'm sure. I did some research and picked like the top 30 episodes. We've been going through these. So it's been a while since I watched all of them. But just today, for example, we watched one that had Roger Daltrey in it from The Who, and Steve Buscemi when he was younger.
What about Phil Collins?
I doubt it. I doubt Phil Collins.
Now, what about, I'm interested actually to explore this idea of the, the dark, dark approach to horror films versus the one that sort of tinged with some humor.
Yeah.
When you're putting together your Halloween movie day, what do you call it? Is that what you call it?
I call it Halloween Horror Day.
Halloween Horror Day, which you had yesterday. It's a marathon.
Yep.
You watch several feature films.
Yeah, we watch five films in a row.
That's the tradition, five in a row?
Yep. It's become that after. I've been doing it since I was really young, but it's become a five movie marathon,
And do you make efforts not to repeat movies from the past?
Oh, I put a lot of effort into picking the lineup.
Really?
It's
and
a big
sir,
deal.
When did this start roughly?
Well, when I started watching many horror movies in a row when I was very, very small. And then it morphed between forms based on who I was living with and where I was living and how many people wanted to commit. And then, of course, when I met my wife, that changed things. So I've done Halloween Horror Week, where I've had themes every day and people come over when they can. And this is just how it evolved. I have a friend, my friend Mark, who has an amazing viewing situation. He has a big 1,600-inch projector screen and surround sound. And it's like a little theater. So we go to his place and do it all day there. All the people who are willing to commit, and there's not very many. You've seen over the years.
Because you're only allowed entry if you promise not to leave.
You have to.
That's kind of a creepy Halloween concept.
You have to commit to the thing, and you have to want to. The people who want to are very, very excited, and everybody else doesn't get to come.
Has anybody ever come and after two or three movies said, "Okay, that's it for me," and then they've been banished?
No, but I've had people who've come one year. They've done it once and never come back.
How are they holding up by the fourth or fifth film?
No, it was bad. There was one year that was really bad. I picked, my lineup was really, like you were just saying, the comedic versus the real.
It was too
and
dark.
I had a really real year where there was multiple like survival horror movies, just people in real situations being chased and afraid and dark, dark themes, home invasion, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And I lost the room. By the end of the day, I think everyone was done with horror, with me, with Halloween.
And how does it, like, are there breaks between the movies?
Yeah. So the way we do it now, it's, you'll stop and have some snacks. You go upstairs. Mark's the place in the basement, so we'll all go upstairs and have a drink and have a talk and get out into the light.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to the wife and the kids, and they'll, you know, and it's...
I feel like a lot of people, especially if they're getting multiple, you know, if it's just you and your husband or wife or whatever, it's one thing, but if there's different people coming, I feel like most people would do like a double feature, maybe a triple header. Mm-hmm. But the five films, so what were the five films yesterday?
So yesterday the lineup, we did Creep, which is a new movie by the Duplass brothers.
Okay.
Some people may know who that they are. A new horror movie. And then I was trying to remember them in order. Now we did Antichrist with Lars von Trier.
Are these all films you'd seen prior?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's always things that I've seen, and they're either classic movies, movies that I want to share with people, movies that I know are great. There's a lot of criteria that go into me picking the lineup. So,
and the sequence as well?
Yeah, for sure.
What informed the sequence? Well, tell me all the films and then tell me why you chose the sequence.
Creep, Antichrist, Torso, which is an Italian giallo horror movie, which I think we talked about before. Giallo is just a style of slasher movie from before there were slasher movies, where it's a mystery, usually a man in black gloves, and the whole thing is trying to figure out who's doing the killing.
And ironically, it's usually Bill Cosby, the guy who used to promote Jell-O.
Yeah, Cosby's Jell-Os. The thing about these Italian movies...
You got to put the gloves on, man.
Is that... I'm a rapist. So, and then the fourth was...
That's not libel,
is it? A movie called The Bay, which is an environmental horror movie by Barry Levinson, which is funny.
Oh, interesting.
And the fifth movie, the headliner this year, was The Omen, which was our classic for this year.
And is that how you break it down? Like the closer is a classic, the opener is a new
movie?
There's
usually a headliner. What's happened the last couple of years, which is fun, is that there's been big anniversaries for horror movies. So last year, Jaws was the headliner because it was the 40th anniversary of Jaws.
Oh, wow.
And then the year before that, there was an anniversary for Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So this year, I picked The Omen because I hadn't watched it. Omen was a real staple for me when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I used to watch five or six of the same movies every Halloween, and that was one of them, and I hadn't watched it in years. So that was exciting this year.
Are there classic horror movies that are specifically Halloween-themed? I mean, obviously the movie Halloween comes to mind.
Yeah, Halloween for sure, and that's the prime
But is one. That's its own genre, the Halloween horror genre?
I don't think it is its own genre. I don't think there's enough good ones for it to be its own genre.
Can you think of some
really
that you enjoy?
Well, Trick or Treat is one, which is an anthology horror movie like Creepshow that came out about 5 years ago, and people really like that one. I'm not a huge fan. I'm a bigger fan of Creepshow, as an example. It's pretty good. That's one that pops in my head. There's a few other ones. Pumpkinhead. I don't actually know if that's specifically Halloween, like they talk about Halloween in it. But there's definitely some themes there. Now I'm doubting myself. Pumpkinhead's one I used to watch a lot too, but it's been a few years. I should watch Pumpkinhead next year.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, it's hard to think of some other ones. I'm sure there are. A lot of times with themes, they're just not, you don't remember them well because they don't do a good job. Like, it'll be at Halloween, but they don't use it.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas when you use it properly, then it sticks in your head. It's funny because I just watched Krampus talking of themes a couple of nights ago, which is a Christmas-themed horror movie.
Oh.
And that's one where you really remember that it's the theme because it's taking place.
So
all
unique.
The trappings of Christmas.
Yeah.
Right? Very unique in that regard.
Yeah.
Wasn't very good.
But memorable, nonetheless.
Yeah. It's funny. Actually, I have an easier time remembering Christmas-themed horror movies than Halloween-themed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's because of the... holiday itself.
Thanks for playing the piano while giving this commentary as well.
Oh, no problem. Do you like what I chose?
Well, we haven't acknowledged that, but Keith is an excellent piano player.
Yeah, I've been a pianist on occasion.
You have, and I know that about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, let's incorporate that into the show. Yeah. And it never fails to impress me that you can offer such thoughtful commentary mm-hmm. while seemingly there's no sheet music here. You're just sort of riffing.
Yeah.
How does that
work?
Well,
to be fair, I wrote this previously.
So you've composed the song.
Yeah.
But even the way that it's servicing the things that you say, I find that to be intriguing.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's almost as if we had planned it in advance.
Yeah. I'm playing some creepy music here, which is not you playing the piano.
No, I also played the gorilla in the
versatile in Gorillas in the Mist.
Yeah.
With Diane Fossey.
Sigourney Weaver.
Performed by Sigourney Weaver. I'm looking at this image for this song that I'm playing off the internet, and it's of a creepy clown.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking about the fact that they're remaking the movie It.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
I've never read it. So I'm not
You've
your
never read
for
it.
Once I'm not your guy in this regard. Of all the Stephen King books I've read, I haven't read It. I watched the miniseries of It when I was younger, and that's why I guess I never watched the book.
Yeah.
And the miniseries is okay. I mean, Tim Curry is phenomenal in It as the as Pennywise the clown.
Mm-hmm.
But as for a remake, who knows? I don't have a problem with people remaking things. I'm willing to give it a shot. I don't think it hurts any originals, but in this case, the original isn't all that good anyway, like the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no, I don't think there's any reason for anyone to be upset about them making It, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it, but there's no way they're going to be able to capture Tim Curry. In fact, speaking of loops and how the world works, one of the other episodes of Tales from the Crypt I watched today was a Tim Curry episode where he played an entire family, like Rodney Dangerfield, that's not right. It's weird to picture Rodney Dangerfield by mistake. Haven't popped into
it doesn't
head.
Happen often in 2016.
Oh man.
Not as often as it did back in the 80s.
Oh my goodness, I'm trying.
Are you thinking of Tyler Perry?
Yeah, sure. Any one of those guys who did like a bunch of roles, whatever. Not Rodney Dangerfield. Yeah, so it was an episode where Ed Begley Jr. is a con artist who pretends to be a salesman, and he comes to the door of a nice Southern woman, and it's Tim Curry dressed up as a woman. And then he plays the husband of the house. And then they also have a daughter. And he plays all three roles. And it's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And it's the episode's quite good. It's one of the good ones.
He's definitely got a memorable face, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, that's what was cool is he was covered up, but you could still see the Tim Curry in there.
Just like in, you know, same thing with Pennywise and with the Grinch as well. Did he perform the Grinch in something?
I don't think so.
Oh, you know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking of the movie Home Alone 2.
Of course you are.
There's a shot where he does the Grinch smile.
Isn't Donald Trump also in Home Alone 2?
He is. And isn't
Blast
that,
it.
It's interesting how we almost got through this whole episode without conjuring his name. Keith, we've got about a minute left. We're listening to the sound of the virtual campfire there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, how do we want to summarize this episode? I mean, this is episode 7 of series 2. Mm-hmm. This is our 17th episode overall. And, yeah, we do the show every Sunday. Clocks are changing next week. But this episode was centered around Halloween because tomorrow is Halloween,
mm-hmm.
and this has been Halloween weekend. But, yeah, how did you feel about it? You got to tell your story.
Yeah, it was good. It was good to do a story. I've been excited about reading a story. And so I think it went well. I'll listen to it back and see how it went.
Yeah. That's what we should do is we should analyze next week how the story went.
Sure.
From the standpoint of you listening to your own story. Yeah. But you love this time of year and tomorrow. So what are you going to actually be doing tomorrow?
Well, Nancy's coming home a bit early, and we're going to go do a neighborhood walk and check out the kitties in a non-predatory way. I'm not going to wear a skull. And everyone's going to feel safe and happy.
Well, folks, you heard it here, and we shall see you next week.